Broad topics, broad minds, broad hosts, but not just for broads. This is Broadscast with Kim Goldman and Jackie McDougall.
Good morning, Jackie McDougall.
Good morning, good evening, good everywhere. how are you, Kim Goldman?
I am feeling tired today. Yeah, I am. Do you want to, I have a confession.
What?
Sometimes when I have trouble sleeping, I use sleep aids.
You do?
I
sleep
aids? I sleep aids. Yeah, sometimes I take Ambien. Doctor prescribed, doctor monitored.
Isn't that one of those that like people get do crazy things when they're on Ambien?
No, you know, I've never, I think I have crazy dreams. We've discussed
this. Do you order stuff or?
Like, oh, no. That was our friend, our comic friend, Wendy Liebman.
Yes.
No, I have terrible sleeping habits, and I have for 20 plus years. And so every once in a while, I'll take an Ambien if I know that, like, so I took an Ambien last night, and then all of a sudden, I could hear my son going, Mom, Mom, Mom. And I was like, what? He's like, come here quick. And so I run downstairs, and he's like, I saw the world's largest bug. My son hates bugs, and so I'm looking around. I'm like, dude.
What time is this?
I don't even know.
Like, in the morning?
No.
Oh.
I went to bed before him because I was exhausted. Mm-hmm. And so I have one of those PVC pipes that I use to, like, lock my slider door, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And it wasn't in line with the slider door. And so Sam's like, it went in there. I'm like, the bug went in there, really?
In the PVC pipe?
Yeah. And so I pick it up very casually and, like, balance it on my hands, and I walk towards him. He's like, what are you doing? What are you doing? I'm like, well, I'm going towards the sink. Like, and he's yelling at me, like, get out of the way. And I tip it over in the sink, and sure enough, there is a gigantic bug. It went, you can't hear it because it's radio, but it, like, clunked on the sink, and I ground it up in my dish. Well, that's what I'm supposed to do with it.
I don't know. Don't tell my kids you did that.
But mind you, I'm in, like, an Ambien haze, and then I went and I laid back down, and I'm,
are you sure that really happened?
And I think I'm falling asleep, and then I don't know what time it was, but my son knocked the door, mom, like, what? I can't sleep, can I sleep with you? I'm like, sure. And so fine, my son gets in bed with me, it's fine, he couldn't sleep. So this morning my alarm goes off at 6:45 like it does every day. I'm brushing my teeth. I'm getting myself together. I go to wake up my son. He's not in his room. I go downstairs. I'm like, Sam, I'm panicking. I'm looking at every room in the house, in the garage, like, what is happening? And I go back up to his room thinking that maybe he was in the bathroom and I missed him and now he's changing, nowhere to be found. And I go in my room and there he is asleep in my bed. I totally forgot. And I was having, like, a small anxiety attack this morning.
That's funny.
Is it really, though?
It is, because it wasn't me. Wow.
So my Ambien restful night was a complete facade. So other than that, I feel great.
Wow.
And well, you?
Well, in comparison, I feel awesome. Hey, so today on the show...
Is that too long of an intro?
We have a show today, other than just us talking about us. Lauren Lake, she's an attorney, legal expert, and the judge on Lauren Lake's paternity court.
Dun, dun, dun.
She's going to be here, and we have lots of questions for her, so that's exciting. But before we do that, you know, there are other things we need to do, like...
And now, broad topics.
Broad topics. So did you know that maybe sleeping with your child, Kim, is okay, but sleeping with your cat, snuggling with your cat, it could be a bad thing?
No.
Yeah, that's what they're saying on
they
on Bustle. Let's see. Why you shouldn't snuggle your cat, it can make you sick. Cuddling with your kitty could give you a disease called cat scratch fever, which I didn't even know that was a thing other than Ted Nugent, which is a bacterial infection caused by fleas. That's pretty disgusting. Do you cuddle with your cats?
I don't. I don't let animals in my room.
Because you have two cats.
I have three cats and two dogs, and I do not let animals in my room.
At all?
At all. My door, all of the doors in our house are all closed. We don't like animals in the room. I don't like hair. My cats used to lay on my throat and, like, massage my head, and I need my space.
Yeah, I mean, you could get serious but rare complications that can affect the brain, eyes, heart, and other internal organs. And, although it can be treated with antibiotics, but yeah, I mean, you used to snuggle with your cat more, right? Didn't your cat used to like come into your room?
I did let my cat sleep in my room with me, but it was too busy in there. It was just too, well, it was only when I had two cats, but they were huge snugglers and they still are. So when I sit on the couch, they're all over me. But just not in my room. I don't want all the hair in there. I just think it smells like my house already smells like a zoo.
Right.
That I want there to be some spaces that are clean and
I agree.
Smell like lavender.
Yeah, we used to have our dogs upstairs. We have three dogs, I don't even know how that ever happened in my life. But they used to come upstairs, and now we have a gate, like a little baby gate on the stairs. Because I just, no more. Yeah. Sorry. Although I love them very, very much. So, so another broad topic. Lisa Ling wrote for CNN that she regrets her scheduled C-section.
Oh.
She says, she says, everything went according to plan. She welcomed her baby girl. I'm trying to get why she was.
This is so riveting,
Jackie. Through my reporting for the series, I learned that my first C-section and my preference for a second were a part of a major nationwide trend. In just a decade, the rate of C-sections performed in the U.S. shot up over 50%. All-time high in 2009.
It's a big moneymaker for doctors and insurance.
It really is. So what do you think of that? Do you think that doctors are... I had two C-sections, and I was
pretty
upset.
Were they planned, or were they...
I was due on May 20th, and I was told around May 17-ish, maybe a day earlier than that, that I should have a C-section
because
he wasn't dropping, and I had gestational diabetes, and he was big, and it felt very odd to me. Like, it just felt, it was over the phone, you know, it was like, hey, we don't seem to be progressing, and like, I hadn't even hit my due date yet, but I did have gestational diabetes, and I'm not a doctor.
Yeah.
And so, but I remember, like, you know, I had the doula and like all hired and the birth plan and like all that stuff that now I'm like, really? So I was very much interested in having, you know, birth the old fashioned way.
I remember when I was pregnant that, I had an OBGYN at the time that I loved, but I remember people asking me, that during that process of making sure that you were comfortable with the doctor that was going to be delivering your baby to see how C-section happy they were. You know, I had tons of people in my life at the time that were just getting these scheduled C-sections because they wanted to be, you know, they only had a small break from school, or they wanted to go on vacation, or needed to be on a Friday, whatever it was.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff made me just a little skittish. If there's a medical reason that is the safest way for mom and baby to be delivered, then absolutely. But I did learn very early on that doctors are just, it makes their schedule easier when they've got vacation. They can clock them in, clock them out. Like,
yeah, I felt like I was
insurance was making a bank on that.
Yeah. I felt like you had to make a tea time or something, you know?
Yeah.
And so, and I didn't even realize that C-sections are actually on average 50% more expensive.
Yeah.
So imagine that being a
doctor.
Your
surgery
schedule is set. You're getting more money.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's a moneymaker. So is she upset? Why is she regretting it? Because she wanted to experience natural childbirth, or she didn't feel like she had
She ended up getting on her second, when she gave birth to her second daughter, she didn't heal so quickly. And so she had a lot more pain. And then she had an infection and some complications. And so, she was talking to people about the benefits of vaginal birth versus the C-section. And she was like, oh yeah, you know, I think maybe I went the wrong way. So, ultimately it has two kids and they're healthy and everybody's okay. But
yeah.
I remember with my second son, I wanted to do a VBAC, vaginal birth after cesarean. And I was all about like, okay, I can do that. You know? And then he was, talk about it. The first one was 9 pounds, but my second son was 11 pounds when he was born. And so I'm kind of glad that I didn't.
That's funny. I listen to people all the time and talk about like want to have natural childbirth without, what's it called?
Epidural.
Epidural, thank you.
I think you had an epidural last night.
No. I just can't. I had VBAC in my head. But my stepmom, she was like adamant. You know, she had three children without epidurals and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, yay. Like, what do you need to prove? Like, I'm good. I'm going to shoot myself up the back if I needed to. I mean, like, I tried to hang in there as long as I could. And then at some point, I'm like, I am not supposed to be miserable while I am birthing my child. Like, honestly, I don't want to be in pain. I don't want to be screaming. I want to be able to be present. I want to be mindful of what's happening. And if a little bit of epidural helps me be in a better place to welcome a child into the world, then hell's to the yeah, that's what I'm going to do.
Well, I think that worse than anything when your kid comes into the world is to come in under like duress. Or,
it's not good for
all
anybody.
That stress. It's not. Yeah. It's not. So, but it's just interesting how childbirth, we try to plan everything. We want to know what's going on and all that. And then like parenting is nothing like that. Like
last bit of control you can have is just right up until you squat that baby out.
Right. Yeah. I think that that's the last grasp of control. So we have to take a break, but we will be right back with Lauren Lake.
Connect with the Broads on Facebook at facebook.com/broadscast.
Welcome back. Two broadcast, Kim Goldman, Jackie McDougal.
Babies and stuff, right? That was a good segue into our next guest, right?
Oh, very good.
You didn't even notice it.
See, I was like, it took me a second.
Fire this
I'm
morning.
Like, what is that segue? Mm-hmm. So our guest is Lauren Lake. She's a renowned attorney, legal expert, and the judge on Lauren Lake's paternity court. Welcome to the show, Lauren.
Hi, thank
Lauren.
You so much. It's great to be here with
you. Or should we say your honor?
No, just Lauren is fine. Welcome to the courtroom, Your Honor.
All right, cool. So, I mean, everybody knows you from this show, but, you know, you're not an overnight success, that's for sure. You have so much experience before the show. Like, tell us how you got into, you know, the legal world to begin with. What was your...
I've been an attorney for more than two decades. I started off practicing law in my hometown of Detroit, Michigan, and then moved on to New York and New Jersey, where I'm licensed to practice law as well. I've practiced everything from criminal defense to entertainment, transactional, a family law. I did a lot of family law, which led me to this particular show, Lauren Lake's Paternity Court, where I serve as judge of a courtroom that helps families uncover the truth and that they need to move forward, and it relates to DNA evidence. So, no, you're right. I am not some overnight sensation. Some people think I just came out of nowhere. I have been working for years and years, like I said, almost two decades, but most importantly, practicing law and helping families and advocating for children for years. Many people used to see me on CNN and HLN and MSNBC, Fox. I used to be a legal analyst for many years on air, and also a legal expert and relationship expert on shows like The View and Dr. Phil and Ricky Lake. And I mean, so many shows. And so this kind of professional portfolio led me exactly where I am today. And I absolutely love my job.
Do you get to still, this is Kim, by the way, do you get to still practice in a courtroom anymore? I mean, beyond the television component of it?
Outside of the courtroom, not much. I'm able to consult sometimes, but really the brunt of what I do is in my courtroom. That is mostly what I do each and every day, because even when I'm not in session, I'm still going around the country, talking to people, talking to families about how to overcome obstacles. Because at the end of the day, that's what paternity court is all about. It's about overcoming obstacles in your life. And it's something that everyone can relate to.
And that's fantastic, because, I mean, you got to admit, we've come a long way in television with paternity. I mean, we used to be like, you're the father or not the father, you know, and Maury and Jerry Springer. And like what you're doing is so very different from that.
That's what I think was so genius about what our creator and executive producer, David Armour, wanted to do. We had seen paternity handled one way. And listen, it was entertaining to some. But in his opinion, there was a more responsible, more respectful way to handle this that would allow even more people to understand the importance of getting the truth. And so he created this show, this platform. And it's one of the reasons why he said he really wanted me to be the judge of the show, because not only was I able to talk about the law, to empower people about the law, what he saw from my career is that I really had a passion for inspiring people and motivating people to understand that, you know, your one hugest mistake does not define you. It can refine you if you allow it. That we are just that one decision away from a new beginning. And so I'm really blessed that I get to sit as judge of a courtroom on a show that, like I said, respects and celebrates families, fatherhood, you know, old school paternity show. It was you are not the father and they get to doing a dance. Cause right. So happy they're not. You know, what you see on paternity court day in and day out are fathers that stand in that courtroom and want to be fathers. They want the truth because they want to be there for their children. And I think that's special.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, where do you get the stories from? Where do you find?
All over the country. I mean, after our very first season, almost 3 years, we had over 5,000 families that were reaching out to us. Wow. After our very first season. So you can imagine right now how many people contact our show and need help. It is a difficult process to vet. We don't do any fake shows. We don't have actors. All of our families are real. And so our producers have that task where they have to go through the story and make sure it's something that we feel like we can, you know, at the end of the day, we want to help. We need families on our show that really need our help. And so they come from all over the country. Every story is real. And as I say all the time, there are no small claims in our courtroom. These are real people and huge stakes.
Wow. And you've been on the air a long time. You've hit, what, 500 shows now?
Yes, yes. We recently celebrated 500 shows, and wow. It was such an incredible blessing. I was so emotional all day. It just hit me in that moment that, wow, it's not about 500 shows. It's about 500 families. It's about hundreds and hundreds of children whose life are changed because we were able to get the truth. And we were just so excited about that day. And still, when I think about it, I say, wow. And I said to my staff, if you have not realized yet what your purpose is in life, you know, sometimes we go around life and we go, well, I don't know what my purpose is. You know, people say, well, why did God place you on this earth? Well, I don't know. I tell them, I said, you have 500 reasons to be proud, because there will be fathers at their daughter's father-daughter dance, at their sons' football games, at high school and college graduations, because of the work we're able to do on this show. And I could not be more proud.
I can't even imagine how many families outside of those 500 have also been changed that you can't count those because they're watching or they understand or they see somebody else that they relate to and they're able to kind of maybe go through the process on their own, you know, outside of it.
That is such an amazing point. And you're so right. As I travel around the country, people come up to me, and these may be people that say, hey, you know, Judge Lauren, I don't want to come on your show, but I want to tell you, because of your show, I went and got a DNA test. Because of this show, I was able to just ask my mother or ask my father the questions, because I've grown up hearing whispers behind my back all of the time. You know, paternity is a family issue. It crosses socioeconomic, racial bounds. You see this all over, where people are struggling with paternity issues. And I think it's important to know that even though people don't come on television, you're right, they're affected and they're inspired by this programming. And people are getting answers and seeking the truth, even outside of our courtroom. And that just goes to show what a blessing this show is.
So mind my ignorance for a second. Are the petitioners in your courtroom normally men wanting to know if they're the dad, or the women that are trying to, or the women, the petitioners that are trying to prove that so-and-so is or is not the dad? Like, I don't
know. It varies. It varies. It can be anything from a dad wanting to know, bringing in action to find out whether he's the father of a child, to a mother saying that, you know, one of two men are the father of her child, or a grandmother whose son has passed away, seeking relief to find out, is this my, you know, late son's child? It can be siblings. You know, we've had sibling cases where there's an inheritance issue and someone wants to bring an action to say, hey, I'm a part of this family and I should be included in this inheritance, or the opposite. The cases vary, and that's how broad paternity issues are.
Wow. It's such an interesting, like you were saying before, like it's such an interesting topic, and we've seen it in such a different way that I think it's really important, you know, for families to understand that.
Well, we've seen it in such an exploitive way,
yes,
right?
Exactly.
That, you know, I mean, this, you know, listening to it and having seen, you know, bits and pieces of the show, I'm not home much during the day, Lauren. It's no disrespect
it's
to
okay.
you.
It's okay. There's always TiVo.
Yeah. That's true. But I think that it really, it gives credibility to something that for a long time on television, it was embarrassing, you know, the way that we dealt with paternity issues on TV. So,
well, you're right. And listen, it wasn't just on television that it was embarrassing. More importantly, it was completely taboo in our society and our culture. You know, we've had paternity cases on our show that are 30 plus year secrets. And what I often have to remind our new generation is that there was a time when people took paternity secrets to their grave. That was commonplace. There was, you know, a young girl would get pregnant. They'd be sent away. They'd come back, not pregnant anymore. Where was the baby? The baby may have been placed with another family member or up for adoption. And no word was spoken of it. Mm-hmm. Or a young girl would have a baby or a young woman would have a baby, get married. And if that husband said, I'm willing to accept that child and raise that child as my own, no other word was spoken about that child's paternity. And their whole life, they were growing up thinking that this particular man was their biological father. We see cases and situations like that unfold in our courtroom every day, where 30 plus years ago, there was a decision that a secret was in the child's best interest, only to find out later in this new day and age where people are so, that we're more vocal, we're more honest about our feelings. We are a very confrontational culture now. People want answers. And so these secrets are coming out 30 and 40 years later.
Yeah. And that's amazing. I mean, how do you go home after work? I mean, you've been doing this for a long time, so I'm sure you have your systems and, or, you know, your ways to process things. But how do you not take it home with you and feel for some of these, especially when it has to do with kids? I mean, Kim does a lot of work, you know, activist work and advocate work with kids. And so I see that. And sometimes it can weigh down on her. You're doing this all the time with kids and paternity and family. Like, how do you not take it personally?
Well, I hate to say, I mean, I do. I take it personally. I am so invested in my families. And I think when people say to me, wow, you seem like you really care. I don't just seem like I care. I do care. There are days when I go back into my chambers, my dressing room, and I have to have a cry. Literally, like, not trying to cry my eyelashes off. So hair and makeup. look, lady, we've got 10 more families waiting on you. You can't fall apart. But I'm so invested. I think about the children. I go back and I say to some of my producers, I need you to find this mother. I need to find out how this child is doing. I'm worried about this child. We follow up with our families. That's one of the reasons why we do follow-up shows.
Right.
It's because people are so invested in our families. They want to know what happened to them after the cameras start rolling, after they left our courtroom. So yes, I am invested. I think about the children all the time. I have them in my mind, you know, my heart. I pray for them. We pray every morning before we walk out into our courtroom as a staff, because we're hoping that families know that we are here for them to support them. And I think one thing that people don't know is that I don't know the results. When I'm sitting there on the bench with that envelope, I do not know what it's going to say. I am finding out the result at the very same time the family is. Mm. So I am just as invested. There are some days where I'm rooting for someone to be the father. And they're not. And it breaks my heart. But I have to be strong for the family and give them tools to move forward.
Right. In one of those situations where you're rooting for the dad to be the father, do you try to bridge? And again, I have no idea what that story would have been. But do you try to bridge a relationship or some kind of compromise or something so that that man who isn't the biological father can still be part of their kid's life?
Each story is unique. Each situation is unique. If the man is willing, I certainly encourage it, but I also caution that with understanding that in this moment when you're emotional and it all seems beautiful, yes, you can say, I want to be in that child's life, but think about it. Make sure you're sure, because, you know, better to walk away from this child when it's 6 months old than wait till he or she is 6 years old and you decide you can't deal with this, or you decide this isn't my biological child. I have no connection. At the end of the day, there's a person's life and heart at stake. And so we take that very seriously. We also have counseling for every single family. Once they leave our courtroom, they go into our a licensed psychologist we have on our team this season, Dr. Jeff for season 4. And he's absolutely wonderful. And he helps our families, gives them the tools, connects them to resources in their home states so they can continue to get the counseling support and help that they need, because this isn't easy.
You're really changing the face of reality TV with all this responsibility, I have to say, Lauren.
Thank you. We take it very seriously. I mean, we have helped young women, you know, fund their GED. We've given a young woman a scholarship for a nursing program. We try to give baskets of diapers and things for young mothers, parenting classes to young fathers and young mothers. We take it very seriously because, like I said, these children matter to us.
Right. And how do you talk about the show to your own children?
Oh, well, it's interesting. My son, he watches it and when he can. Of course, he's at school during the day. But when he sees it.
There's always TiVo, Lauren.
Well, listen, I have it. And he watches it. And he says, you know, and it's funny because he knows how to go on himself and turn it on. And I say, these people, they're looking for their daddy. And look, he is very blessed to have his mother and his father in his life that love him. And he'll ask me, you know, Mommy, you're helping people find their daddy. You're helping people have a family. And it's like, that's exactly what Mommy does every day. And he says, because we have a family, we are a family. And so it means a lot to me that my son knows that I'm doing good work in the world. And I couldn't ask for more.
That's fantastic. And, you know, as if you're not busy enough, when you're not working and you're not at home, you also help young African-American women through the Women in Entertainment Empowerment Network. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I do. About 7 years ago, I started an organization with three fellow co-founders, Valicia Butterfield-Jones, Christy Henderson, and Sabrina Thompson, an organization that was all about empowering women to live their dreams, to push past limitations, to connect them with the industry that they're interested in. For young women that are interested in being executives in entertainment or work in the entertainment business, we empower them, inspire them through educational and outreach programs. We have an academy every summer in New York, 30-day crash course in the entertainment business, where they learn about legal issues, PR, marketing, whether it's hair, makeup, how to do a 20-second pitch. We take them on field trips to various offices and women executives and men executives, inspire and empower them and give them the tools they need to be successful. So it's very, very exciting. And we also every year have our WEAN Awards. I am walking now to get my charger. We also have the WEAN Awards, which every year celebrate women with a proven commitment to empower young girls worldwide. So we've honored Soledad O'Brien. We've honored, if I'm getting dark here, I'm sorry.
You're good. Grabbing you're good.
We've honored Soledad O'Brien, Nia Long, Kari Champion of ESPN. We've honored so many women that really walk the walk. Don't just talk the talk about empowering women, but walk the walk. So it's been an amazing 7 years, and we're excited that each year we're able to put on that free program. Our academy is free. Young women audition every year, and they vie for a shot. So it's exciting. And this year we actually did film the academy, so we're going to be hopefully having a television show that highlights what we're able to do.
So Jackie and I talk a lot on our show about how women can either help bring other women up, or we hurt them and we try to bring them down. And so in the last, it's been strange, I think, a little bit, Jackie, in the last couple of weeks, months, our shows have all really been about these incredible women supporting each other and really right. championing each
even
other.
Even when we're not intending the show to be about that.
Yeah.
It's like a
yeah.
common thread.
Yeah. So here you are doing the same thing. So can you remember somebody, a woman in your life that led that brigade for you, like there was someone that stood out to you that, like, wow, she's that lady for me, she's that mentor for me that I want to emulate her in my own life?
Well, I mean, first and foremost, my mother and my grandmother both. I mean, my mother is from a family of 10 children. My grandmother had 10 children, 7 girls. So talk about women inspiring and empowering women. I learned early on from my huge family that women, we step up for one another. You know, and listen, as a child, you witness it on just the smallest of levels, but they're so meaningful. You know, at a family dinner, when I watch my aunts and my mother serve a family dinner, how one is serving this, one is plating this, one is washing the dishes, one is, you know, I grew up witnessing women support women. And, you know, I feel very, it's important to me to reflect upon that, but also to carry on that legacy of how much it means to have women surrounding you that support you. I've been blessed. I have, like I always say, some of the smartest, most amazing friends in the world, girlfriends in the world. And at the end of the day, they're just my girls, but I mean, they are former presidential appointees. They are incredible lawyers and doctors and teachers and artists and musicians. And we each support one another. One of my greatest compliments is when one of them says to me, you know, on that show, you are so real. You act just like you. That's important to me because I want to be authentic in this life. And I want to spread the word and be an example that you can, as a woman, be your authentic self, exactly who you are, and bring the gifts you're supposed to bring to this world. And there will be other women to support you along the way. I have one funny story. When I first did Court TV many years ago, it has to be almost, gosh, 10, 13 years ago, when I started as a legal analyst, the first show I did was Lisa Bloom's show, and she's a very celebrated attorney. On the commercial break, after talking about the law, never forget, we were covering a case, and on the commercial break, she says to me, "You're absolutely amazing. I'm going to call my agent right now. I'm texting my agent right now because she needs to know about you." You know, we hear so many stories about women that are trying to put another woman down so they can get ahead. Or we see so much on television. It's always a constant cat fight. You know, I tell people all the time, I have not experienced that. I have never had a day in my life where I sat at dinner with my girlfriends and we start having a huge argument and acting a fool. You know, real women, we just don't act like that.
Yeah.
And out of the blue, you know, Lisa literally texts her agent, and my agent, Babette Perry, is still my agent to this day, and says, "Look, there's this phenomenal young woman on my show right now talking about the law, and she needs to be on television inspiring and people with the law and empowering people with the law." We are still friends to this day. Just had lunch with her last week. That's what real women do. Women win together.
Tell Babette Perry I said hello.
Small world.
It was a very small world. Yeah, we met a handful of years ago. She may not remember. But you know, you've opted to join two major industries, you know, whether in the legal form and in the entertainment world, and you're saying that you've never had situations that, specifically in the entertainment world, that women have tried to step on you. I mean, or that you know of?
Let me say this, you know,
These are two male-dominated worlds, so I'm just...
Absolutely, and I operate from a position of faith. Let me first say that. My faith is very important to me, and there's a scripture in my faith that talks about in the Bible. It says, "No weapon formed against me shall prosper," and I really operate from that level. Sure, there have been times that I have felt negative energy. There have been times where I felt, maybe this person doesn't want me to be in this particular position, or maybe they prefer to be in this position, or maybe there's a level of envy, or whatever it is, or maybe it's because I am a woman that I am not able to move to the next level. And I think what's important is, and as I go around this country talking about limitless living, it's not about the limitations we face, because we will all face those, and they will come in the form of haters. They will come in the form of glass ceilings. They will come in the form of low self-esteem. They will come in the form of negative competition. It's about how we hurdle over that. I tell people all the time in my courtroom, I'm old school, and I like some old school things, because one thing about being old school is that it's your work. It's your work ethic. Your work speaks for itself. Your character, who you are. And thus far, it has brought me a mighty long way. And I'm just going to keep it that way. You know what I mean? There have been a lot of people. I've sat in rooms where people said to me, "Well, you're a lawyer. You're a designer. You're a judge of a television show. You're a singer. I mean, which one of these things are you going to be?" I mean, with their nose all turned up, like, I can't be multifaceted.
Right.
I just choose not to buy
into limitations. Pick one, Lauren. That's it. That's all you got. One.
As my son would say, I'm going to ruin it. You're OG. Like all of my son's friends, they're all like, you're OG. I'm like, what is OG?
Yeah, but you know, I'm so white.
I don't even understand. I can't even say it.
OG. Well, I mean, look, that means you're old school. And that means you're on top of your game.
Right.
So that's a good thing.
All right.
Kim's getting schooled today. So, I mean, you talk about, you know, your singing. So on the show, we also talk about the fact that we get to this point in life, and I don't know where it was for you. It could be as a young kid or, you know, later, but where you're doing what you do and maybe you love your career, but there's something outside. There's something that just sparks you and you're passionate about it and you have to do it. Everything inside you. And so is that what singing is for you? Because you're not, it's not like singing in the shower here. I mean, you used to sing backup for like Jay-Z, Mary J. Blige, P. Diddy, you know.
I don't remember a time that I wasn't singing. My father has this recording that he did. My father's a speech and language pathologist, a doctor of speech and language pathology. And one of his early studies, I guess, was my language development. And at 2 years old, he has this tape recording, again, old school, a tape recording of me. And I'm singing all these songs. Take me out to the ball game. I'm just singing. I don't remember ever not singing. I was always the little kid with the solo in the school play and, you know, in the choir and just sang in church choir. And so it is more than a passion for me. It is really a part of me. And people don't know this, but I've been writing songs for so many years. And sometimes when I'm on the bench, I am literally quoting words to my songs, inspirational songs that I've written over the years. When I try to give people a tool, one time I told a young woman, don't pretend to be what you don't intend to be. And that's a lyric from a song I wrote. And I learned that from my father. My father taught me that. And I wrote a song about being authentic in life, being free to just be yourself. And so, yeah, music is definitely a passion, more than a passion. It is a very real part of me. I can't imagine my life without it.
And I mean, that's how you paid your way through law school.
I did. I sang in bands. Yeah. Yeah. You know, when I was in law school on Fridays and Saturday nights, when everybody went out and relaxed and went to the bar or partied and went to the club, I was actually the singer in the club. I used to sing in bands and sing at corporate functions, weddings, I even sang funerals. I sang everywhere. And it was one of the ways I helped pay my way through law school. And so after having the opportunity to sing with amazing acts like Puff Daddy and Mary J. Blige and JT Taylor of Kool & the Gang, I traveled the world with him on his world tour. I feel very blessed. So when the Atlanta Braves asked me this year to sing the national anthem, I was indeed very, very honored. And it was a fantastic experience.
What was that like in front of all those people?
It was wonderful. You know, singing the national anthem is not easy. It is a very difficult song to sing, even though it sounds very easy. And the echo in the stadium mm-hmm. is something that every singer just says, wow, it's something to contend with. But just to be out there on that beautiful day, my son was there to be able to witness it. And it was awesome.
My singing would be able to get me half a credit on an online course. So I'm super proud of you.
You know, singing is a spiritual thing. I tell people all the time, whether you can hold a tune or not, sing out the song in your heart. That's what life's about.
I went to the first game for the Rams in Los Angeles, and it was a big production. Red Hot Chili Peppers performed, which I was reminded that I don't really like the Red Hot Chili Peppers. But they didn't they didn't even sing the songs that people know. They sang these two songs
some new stuff. Okay.
Yeah, but nobody knew that, and it was just too hot. And then CeeLo Green, which was an odd choice, I think, in my brain, because he had a gigantic Green Bay Packers tattoo on his arm that was visible while he was singing.
I didn't know he had that.
Yeah, but it was visible during the national anthem for the Rams game. But he was singing, and it was amazing to me. The whole place got quiet, and everybody was singing. Like, you could feel the buildup and crying. I mean, you're looking around, and people are crying, and I'm that girl. Like, I have to stop everything. It moves me. I mean, I can't keep it together. So I can't even imagine how you can sing that in that kind of environment, because I'm a weeping mess, and I, you know, but I'm belting it out as loud as I can. But I just, it's amazing. So the fact that you can do that, kudos to you.
Thank you.
Yeah. That's nerve wracking.
Oh,
so
totally.
Yeah. So In addition, okay, so let's, if you're just joining us, we're talking to Lauren Lake, who's the judge on Lauren Lake's paternity court. And
premiering today, premiering, no, no
the 19th
of September
of the new season. So you're, you know, so you're on there, you're a mom, you're singing like amazing, you know, you have a new single, Limitless.
I did. I wrote a new song called Limitless because I'm just so excited to spread the word about living life limitlessly. And, you know, people, as I travel the country, people say to me, you've had such a diverse professional career. You're constantly reinventing yourself. And I'm like, yes, I do. And you can too. You should. You must. I mean, in this life, we all encounter so many ups and downs, so many things. I mean, you know, just when you think you've got all your ducks in a row, you know, one just jumps out of line. Just when you think you're juggling all the balls and you've got your rhythm going, one ball drops or three balls drop. And it's about how to pick that up and keep moving. It's about how to keep moving even when you're still trying to figure out how to put it all together. And in our courtroom, I feel like each and every day I'm able to help families move forward. I'm able to help families say, you know what? I may not have gotten this right the first time, but I can get it right from here on out if I decide. So Limitless is all about that. You know, the lyrics are like, there's nothing you can do if you try. There's nothing you can't do if you try. You know, there's no dress rehearsal. You only got one life, and you do. So you just have to make up your mind and decide that you are ready to live it limitlessly. So I'm really excited about it.
Well, and
it'll be on my new website that's going to be coming soon.
And oh, cool. somewhere in all of this, you also sat down and wrote a book.
I did. I wrote a book.
Girl, let me tell you, advice on love, life, and love for this for single successful women. You wrote that a couple years ago.
I wrote that probably about 7 years ago. You know, as I was a relationship expert on the Ricky Lake show and on several other shows, people would ask me things about love and relationships, and they would ask me about life. And more importantly, how do you become all that you can be when dealing with love and relationships? And it's not always easy, especially for women, because we are the givers. We are the people in relationships that usually do a lot of the work, usually most of the work. And listen, we're also the people that often lose ourselves, where we're tending to everyone else, our husbands, our mates, our boyfriends, our children, our families. And sometimes we lose ourselves. So, yes, I wrote a book that answered women's questions about how do you still live your very best life, even when dealing and navigating relationships.
That's fantastic. And as a lot of judges in the courtroom are known for their robes, people actually, you know, acknowledge and notice the fabulous necklaces that you wear.
Yes.
And so you're kind of taking that into a new avenue as well.
I am. People have asked me since season one, these necklaces you wear, where did they come from? This is amazing. And I said, oh, my gosh, this is a great idea. And I came up with this idea to develop the Limitless system, because the necklaces that I wear on the show are custom made. And we do that because, you know, it's really started off as a practical issue that to do 140 shows in a season and to get 140 necklaces, that's a lot.
Yeah.
And so what we ended up saying was, I'm crafty. And those of you that used to know, I used to do a show on HGTV. I've been crafty all my life and creative.
Stop bragging, Lauren. My God.
I'm just referencing that I did, but I'm crafty. And so I said, you know what we should do? We should make these necklaces. And that way we're able to use the same beads over and over again in different ways, create different looks. So that's what we do. And I'm creating a necklace system that reflects the same thing I do on the show. And I'm so happy and thankful that people love them. So you'll be able to do it yourself soon.
That's fantastic. I have to say, I know for me personally, I can only speak for myself, that talking to you today, like, we all have our stuff in our lives. We all have ideas and paths that we think that we're going down, and we're just, we can get insecure or not sure about it. And talking to you for me has been like, yeah, that's right. I'm going to keep doing it. I'm going to do my thing. I'm going to make it happen. So I'm sure if I feel that way, that all of our listeners, you know, many of our listeners will feel the same too.
That is such a great compliment. Thank you so much.
And you're just so inspiring.
Like I said, but everyone has a light, and that's, you know, that I try to each and every day, you know, shine my light. And I encourage everyone. People see all the time, if you follow me on social media, I'm like, keep shining. Just keep shining. We all have dark days, cloudy days. You know, it's cliche, but it's true. Rainy days. But we have to live and shine despite of it. The sun always comes out at some point. So I love that. Thank you so much for that. If that is all that I do in this world, is inspire other people to live life limitlessly, I'm thankful.
That's fantastic. And we'll have all of the links to all these fabulous places on our website, but where's your hub that you'd want us to send people?
Oh, sure. You can follow the show, please, at Paternity Court TV, and you can follow me at Lauren L. Lake, and season 4 of Lauren Lake's Paternity Court, it premieres today. So check your local listings and please tune in. It is an incredible season with some very courageous families.
Well, you've been incredible, Lauren, and we certainly, I feel like I still want to call you Honorable Lauren. You've earned that with us here today, so thank you so much for giving us your time today.
Thank you.
Congrats on your Emmy nomination also.
Thank you so much.
All right, have a great day. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Lauren Lake, Paternity Court. I have to say, you as a person who does so much for families, for teens, for kids, for... You know, as I constantly say, you're out saving the world when you're not here in the studio. Yeah. I've worked in reality TV and that side of it. So to actually take what people may see as, oh, Paternity Court must be similar to all the ways we used to see it, and actually bring some responsibility into it.
Right.
It's surprising and refreshing.
It is surprising. And I mean, and I, you know, was going to ask, but she already had the answer, which was, what kind of wraparound services do they do? You know, once they change people's lives, good or bad, you know, what other types of additional support is provided? Because right. I think, you know, that's a life changing moment that she gets to be a part of on live television. And I think the fact that the show is responsible in the fact that they create an environment that hopefully is very makes that transition a little bit more comfortable, mm-hmm. you know, as they move from one way or the other, from having a child not to knowing who their father is, whatever it is. I mean, that's always where I go. So I appreciate that. You know, I mean,
that's
such
to help families, you know, before it goes way too far down the yeah. road where now you're seeing the kids because.
Right. I wonder if she ever like sings the.
The singing judge. Oh, we should yeah. ask her that. So yeah. we'll have yeah. her on again. So we have to take a quick break, and we will be right back.
Subscribe to Broadscast on iTunes.
I told you it'd be fast.
Wow.
Here we are, back
do
again.
Do it. Did you go do what he just said?
Hey, so you want to support the show and also shop at some of the places you love to shop already, head over to broadscast.com/special offers.
Yes.
And you can get fun deals from Groupon and
BarkBox.
And Kim loves to say BarkBox.
Mm-hmm. What, Amazon? We have something
for Amazon. And Pier One and Audible.com. You can get a free
Stitch Fix.
Audible.com. You can get a free month of Audible.com and a free audio download at audibletrial.com/broadcast.
I need to do
wow.
that.
I need to
do that.
You haven't done that? Are you kidding me?
Oh my God.
I get my books and I love getting.
No, I don't read.
No, but I get my audiobooks. Hello.
I know,
I got yours.
Well, mine's good though.
I got Lovey Ajayi's who that just came out. I got Pivot from Jenny Blake. She yeah. was on our show.
Really? You got them all downloaded and you actually listen to them?
I do when I walk the dogs.
Oh.
Not as often as I should, but I do. That's my time to like turn on a book and just walk. And then of funny. Course,
turn on a book
because I used to get books and they would just sit there on my, they make great coasters.
I have a book. My son and I decided last summer like a year ago, summer, that we would buy a book and we would read it together. Hmm. And his book is completed with all of the perfect fold over corners and the, whatever those are called, the earmark thing.
Yeah.
Mine is next to my bed with a nice stain mark from the water.
Is it the same book as each other?
Yeah. No. Mine's Orphan Train.
Okay.
And it's dusty. And it has a stain mark on it from the cup that I consistently put on it in the same spot.
I think I have coffee cup or a watermark on one of your books up in my room, but it's actually red. I've read it though.
You're bringing my book into your bedroom, are you? Uh-huh.
But you could go, you know, to audibletrial.com/broadcast and, you know, download a book for yourself. I like, because when, you know, when you're not listening to this podcast, mm-hmm. And you're in the carpool lane waiting for the kids or I just find myself in the car on a regular basis. That you can actually listen to these books.
So you remember how we've had
conversations? Rolling your eyes at
me. I'm thinking. You remember how we've had conversations before about how some things will spark a memory or like a song or a phrase? So in my head, what was just happening was, when the going gets tough. Right, that song?
Really?
Yeah, and then I was like,
tough get going.
Yeah.
Why was it with Danny DeVito in the video? Remember that?
But I was going to like build a commercial for Audible in my head. That was where I was happening.
Wow.
I told you that Ambien. It's an Ambien. Yeah,
maybe next time Kim will have a jingle.
Yeah, I'm building a jingle. That's going to be a second source of income for the broadcast.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Awesome. yes. So if you would be so kind to check out our special offers page, we would love you forever. And mm-hmm. another thing is, you know, maybe you listen live. Maybe you're listening on a podcast. Maybe you're listening on iHeart, wherever you're listening. You can also go to iTunes, right? Kim, yes. And subscribe or download there.
Mm-hmm. Spreaker. Do we go to Spreaker? Do we do it on?
We're on Spreaker. We're on iHeart. We're all over the place. So wherever you listen to podcasts what is it you people do that don't have iPhones?
I'm in the galaxy, man.
Yeah, but what is that thing called?
Google Play.
I'm like non-iPhone people
shunned me.
Get your podcast. Yeah, Google Play. We're over there.
World domination.
We're on YouTube. The YouTube. So you can subscribe over there. There are a lot of words today that are a lot of words today I can't say. So I think that's it for us though. I think we've
exhausted ourselves in this show, I think.
I think anyway, Kim's Ambien is rubbing off on me.
No. I'm totally good. Lauren Lake, thank you for coming on
She
broadcast.
Inspired me, seriously.
That was great. She was amazing.
She is just one of those women who I feel like at the end of the day, like she takes the batteries out and then they hang her up. You know what I mean? Like in a closet.
Right.
So, because she's I don't want to say unhuman, but like, she's above us in all that she does.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
She gets so much done.
Get her done.
Anyway, thank you so much, Lauren Lake. And check us out on broadcast.com. That's where you can find all the fabulous ways to check us out as Kim stares at me. All right, guys. Thanks so much for listening.
Bye.
You are listening to Broadcast. For more from the Broads, head to broadcast.com.